to the chase, okay? What are you guys selling?
If you're drowning and I throw you a life jacket, would you grab it? Yes, good. Pick up 200 shares. I won't let you down.
Pay him. Pay that man his money.
Ask them how they'd like to see 30, 40% returns. What are they going to say? No? I don't want to see those returns?
Where's the money, Lebowski?
You're going to make a lot of money, right?
Be aggressive. Learn how to push.
Show him a 3% return, and I'll trust you to watch his kids for the weekend.
I'm a big fan of money.
Move around. Motion creates emotion.
I did not know this.
That's it. I'm done.
Well, and welcome back to Stacks and Jacks. I'm Tom Alley. I'm Brent Weber on the board. SP Futures up 10. NASDAQ Futures up 48. Dow Futures up 77. Headline here says Dow jumps 200 points as reopening plays rebound. Well, that must have been a while ago because they're not up 200 points anymore. Lou, how are you, buddy?
Good morning. How are you?
Doing all right. Did you, that storm that hit you guys, was that a ski resort storm or was that a Front Range storm?
The big one that put 27 inches on Denver was a Front Range storm. So the ski resorts got a little bit. We had snow again yesterday. A lot of that hit the resorts. So this is moisture month. This in April, and we get the mountains up where I have a house, and a lot of the ski areas get most of their snowfall. Not necessarily moisture, but snowfall in March and April, and it's all welcome.
Yeah, they haven't had the best years, have they, in terms of snow? I mean, the snowpack is not.
It was not a good year. The snowpack was down to like 80%, 85% of normal. It's now up back up into the mid 90s. So that's snowpack depth. But the really interesting thing is that. The water content of the snow that we have had here has been very high. So instead of, it's like when we had the 27 inches of snow at at Denver, there was over 3 inches of water in that snowfall, which is a lot for here. And so that makes a big difference. I don't know what our reservoir situation is, which is sort of a measure of, how well we're doing on drought. Most of the state here is in still in drought or extreme drought, however.
Well, I know at I used to go to, I used to go to Steamboat every year, and they'd get some snow. You'd get 10 inches of snow in January, and it was like fluff. I mean, somebody really good could ski through it. There'd be like a big tunnel of snow behind them. It was like, hence the name powder, which they supposedly were famous from Wyoming, is even worse. I mean, have you ever skied up there? I mean, there's nothing to it, no water in it at all. I mean, it would take.
Yeah, it. So the general, the average, I think, the average rule is roughly 10 inches of snow equals 1 inch of water. But, the snow here is all over that number.
Yeah.
So it typically, I think, falls somewhere less than that, maybe. 6 tenths of an inch, 7 tenths of an inch of water, in 10 inches in 10 inches of snow, but we actually beat that beat that number by some margin. So that's pretty good. And I'm hoping we'll see maybe two or three other good snowfalls. Now I just got a new snowblower, so that pretty much precludes any major snowfall in Denver for the next 10 years. But
there's a. A show in Minneapolis, at least there used to be, like Trick Out My Snowblower. Weirdo guys would call in and say what they got in their snowblower. It's like Trick My Ride. Remember that show? Guys would call in.
I do.
Say, yeah, they had a Trick My Snowblower up in Minneapolis, as you can imagine.
One of my neighbors actually has a snowblower with one of those flying tiger shark faces painted on the side of it.
Why don't you just go buy an old Bronco Billy? Or a CJ5 and throw a plow on it. You'd be the host of Toast of the Hood.
A bunch of my neighbors up in the mountains have little ATVs that have little blades on them.
Yeah, well,
that
would work.
They run around and clear their driveways. But normally, again, up at that altitude, a snowfall over over 10 inches is unusual. So they got. In that last snow, the big storm, and this is 2 hours from Denver, so southwest by about 60 miles, 70 miles. you know, Denver got 27 inches. They got almost as much. And again, heavy, lots of heavy water. So that or lots of a water content. So that's very unusual. And of course, the weather here is no longer a topic of discussion after the terrible events in Boulder.
Yeah.
Although, you know, a couple of weird things about that. So when it happened, I was looking at Twitter. So the first Twitter feed story comes up at, you know, like 2:55, saying active shooter situation in Boulder at this King Supers. And I know where this place is. We get up to Boulder occasionally. And so I was following this, and there's been almost a total news blackout on this. I mean, they've got the guy's name. It looks like he's a radical, you know, he was a fan of radical Islam. His dad apparently had a Facebook page that had a bunch of postings on it that looked like this. But the initial press briefing was held at 7 p.m. or so the day of the shooting. And so, you know, this is 4 hours afterwards. Gave almost no information other than we had a suspect in custody. They have yet to release a timeline of events. My wife, who is at least as suspicious as I am, said, something's going on. And I said, well, the fact that the guy is Islamic or you know, Syrian, and may be a factor, because Boulder is very progressive and they don't want to start up anything. And the narrative that was being pushed initially was, you know, this was a white guy going in shooting up a store. Now that it turns out he's not, that narrative has been suppressed in terms of getting a story out about what actually was motivating this guy. You know, of course they're saying, well, we don't know what the motives are, like the Pulse nightclub shooting in Orlando, where the guy was clearly a radical. So the narrative has been, the story and details on this thing, other than listing out the names of the victims and this focusing on this police officer who was apparently one of the first responders and was killed, it's very incomplete. It's like looking at a jigsaw puzzle with most of the pieces gone. And you know, my experience has been, when something like this happens, there's a reason for the narrative being delayed and not coming out, and that's because the people that they're controlling the information don't want you to know, or are trying to minimize the impact of a few things. And so they haven't, as I said, they haven't even put out a timeline. And as far as I can tell, the initial reports of the shooting, and he, you know, he shot people in the parking lot first, and then went into the store. The initial reports of the shooting came in around 2:49 or so, but he was in the store for almost an hour before the situation was resolved. And there were people in the store the whole time. The guy was going through the store shooting people, and I'm thinking, what are we doing here? Where were the police? Two other officers supposedly were wounded. We've heard absolutely nothing on that.
Did you hear that? Because I have a friend in Longmont, which is near Boulder, right? I think it's near Boulder, right? Because he worked in Boulder. Isn't that where Noah is in Boulder?
Yeah, Longmont's not far from Boulder.
Because he worked for Noah, and Noah's in Boulder, right?
Yes.
So I immediately emailed him, and I said, hey, do you hope nobody, well, when you say hope you don't know anybody who got killed, it's like saying you hope nobody, that the people who got killed were somebody you didn't know, which is horrible to say. So I didn't exactly say it in that way, but I basically said, is anybody of that you know involved? And he said, yeah, one of my friend's wives was in the back of the place, and they got her out after a while. And like, you know, it wasn't like 2 minutes, like you're saying, but she got out okay. She's pretty shaken up, but she's... But what he told me, and I don't know, again, this is unsubstantiated, I'm asking the question, he claimed that 10 people are dead and no one was wounded. Everybody the guy shot died. So my thought is, what kind of bullets was he using?
Well, no, I mean, what he was doing, he was using standard 223 ammunition.
Whatever
what
that
he did that I heard, again, all this is anecdotal. The cops are not saying anything about this, which is going to lead me to, you know, a conclusion here in a minute. But at least in one instance, what he did, he shot some guy. The guy goes down, and then he walked over to him and just stood over him and fired, you know, two or three times into the body at close range.
Oh, that's
special. And if that's what he did, and if he had the time to do that, Chief, that's what I'm really wondering about. You know, if he had the time to wander through the store, just shooting people and then walking up and making sure they were dead by shooting them, you know, two or three times up at close range.
I gotta believe everybody else scattered. I mean,
well, where were, and the police response was very fast, at least initially. The officer who was killed, I think, was there in a matter of 5 or 6 minutes.
Well, the guy just got his gun 6 weeks before it. That sounds like something only a professional killer could do. Could be that practiced, could be that good, could be that methodical to pull that off in a 5 minute period.
No, not. I mean, I have no idea what it's like to shoot somebody, and I know. I do target practice, and target practice with a rifle. And again, typically one shot from an AR-15, if you hit somebody in the, you know, in the abdomen, it's generally lethal, but because of the speed of the bullet. But a lot of times people are wounded; they don't get hit. You know, that's what's unusual about this. Nobody wounded. he had time to make sure his targets were dead.
Was there a pattern to the targets?
I'm sorry?
Was there a pattern to the targets? Are they all 40-year-old male, all 30-year-old women? I mean, or just random?
I will say this. They're, according to somebody, and again, a lot of these news reports are being just disappearing. Somebody makes a comment, and then it's gone. You don't hear any other comments like this. So there was an initial comment that this particular store had a fairly large kosher section, and that a lot of the Jewish residents in Boulder liked to shop there because it had a large kosher section, and of course, Passover is this week, I believe.
Yeah,
and
must be,
and
yeah.
So, you know, apparently that might have been a factor. If this guy was a radical Islamist or anti-Semitic, but all of this stuff is sort of percolating around out there, and there's nothing. There's no comments. There's no discussion. I think the timeline, when they put the timeline up, I think the timeline is going to show that the cops, after the initial response, when one of their guys got killed, again, no notice on the people who allegedly were wounded. I think it's going to show that it took way too long for them to get in there, isolate this guy, and shoot him. And during that time, he had enough time to go around and, you know, pick people and kill them. That's the only thing I could think.
So are we going to be?
I can't imagine an armed response in Chicago or some other or one of the Chicago suburbs where the cops would not move into that store as quickly as possible. Given what they thought was happening.
Well, in the suburbs like where I grew up in Evergreen Park, there was no place in Evergreen Park that was more than 2 minutes from the police station because it wasn't a big suburb. Not to mention anybody who might have been out on patrol. So, but that's, you know, probably not as big. But are we going to be lambasted with another 3 weeks of or 4 weeks of the people on the left decrying any kind of gun ownership and the people on the right saying if everybody in the store had guns, he wouldn't have got that far? I mean, are we going to listen to this for a month?
I don't know. We're seeing, I mean, the initial response here and from some lawmakers in Boulder, again, Boulder is about three steps to the left of Trotsky in terms of its political affiliation. The several local lawmakers have said we need to ban assault weapons. And I had this interesting discussion with a couple of attorney friends of mine who are not shooters. And one of them said, you know, didn't we go through this in the U.S. in the 90s? I said, yeah, there was an assault weapons ban for most of the 90s. The biggest problem is defining what an assault weapon is. And so, because you end up, you end up writing a description of, you know, the rifle has an assault rifle is, you know, the barrel of this length, collapsible stock, and a bunch of other stuff. And the gun manufacturers simply adapt their product to circumvent the definition because it's become kind of a meaningless term.
Well, there's no doubt that the U.S. population, other than maybe Bogota or someplace way back in the day, the amount of gunshot deaths in this country is way off the chart when it comes to any other civilized society. I mean, you can't... not even close.
Well, okay. Let's break that down a little bit. But we have a high number of gunshot deaths, but two-thirds of our gunshot deaths are suicides. Something like that.
Well, I'm saying... I had a spectacular internet site the last time you and I talked about somebody blasting 15 people. I don't know which one that one was. They're becoming a blur in my mind. I found an internet site where it was something about mass, and maybe if I looked, you know, for an hour, I could probably find it again because it was so well done. It's got to still be there someplace. If anybody knows where it is, please let me know. It was a mass shooting site where you could define what your terms were mass shooting. Because the first thing somebody says, well, it's a mass shooting, and I say, okay, well, how many is a mass shooting? Well, this site allowed you to filter it. 20 people, you know, and then 8 of them would come up, or 15 people, and a whole bunch of them would come up. Well, I went to this one site yesterday as I was trying to find the other one, defined it at like, three people shot or something, not even, because the one I was talking about, you could put 3 people shot dead or 6 people shot total. You could do all those kind of filters. This one was just, it was like 3 people shot it like at one time. Lou, the thing is unreal. They got a calendar of the year sitting there, and the dates of the year are like in various shades of orange. And you click on like, you know, July 12th, it'll be a list of like 40 shootings if your number's like 3 and over. There was like 5 in Chicago last week. You know,
yeah. Well, you guys had eight people get shot in Chicago on Sunday, right? Or Saturday?
Yeah, and then the mayor, all she's talked about now, she's getting good at this.
I mean, that was 8 people shot at one time.
Yeah,
a house party or something.
Yeah, she's totally, I think it might have been a week ago. But she, but now the entire thing is 2 places that they gave vaccines to prioritize teachers. When the teachers essentially didn't show up, they gave it to other people rather than throw it out. Now she's on these people like white on rice. You know, come on. And of course, a couple of the listeners email me or call me and say, hey, Chief, you missed this one totally. The only reason why she's doing that is to cover up the 8 people that got shot. And she hasn't mentioned that.
That's quite likely. I mean,
yeah.
The narrative here now. If this had been like this nitwit in Atlanta, this crazy in Atlanta, and I say crazy in the meaning in the sense that he was, you know, mentally disturbed. You know, they immediately tried to jack on the narrative, and it was unfettered, and people were allowed to run with it that this was an anti-Asian attack. This guy in Boulder, with clear links to Islamist philosophy, mindset, again, reportedly this was a store featured by, or favored by Jewish patrons because of its kosher section. Nobody's saying anything about the fact that this was an anti-Semitic.
Well, somewhere along the line,
anti-Semitic attack.
Somewhere along the line, we've got it.
Or an anti-Western attack.
Yeah, somewhere along the line, we've got to drop this thing where every single thing we report on, if it's not an old white guy that we can somehow, you know, nail him with some prejudice or something. I mean, I where you are, Lou, I mean, the truth is the truth. I mean, if you see somebody blow through a stop sign in Lincoln Park, 80% chance, 70% chance, it's some yup, probably female in an SUV. Okay, if you see somebody going 100 miles on mile an hour in the rain, he's probably black. If you see somebody on the Stevenson going 100 miles an hour in a 15 guys on a motorcycle, they're probably Hispanic. This is just the truth, Lou. It doesn't mean they're bad people. It doesn't mean anything. It's just, when you deny, you can't deny. You can't deny that 84% of the murders in Chicago are black on black. When you deny it, you can't solve it. If I deny I have a broken leg, I'm sure as hell not going to go get it set. I'm not saying that makes any, that I'm going to generalize on anybody. I'm not saying that, you know, every white person with an SUV is a horrible driver and doesn't care about people. I'm not going to say that. I'm surely not going to say every black person is a murderer. I would never say that. I mean, come on. But this is
our world now in this identity politics kind of analysis that permeates our news stories and more importantly permeates the mindset of the people who are writing the news stories and discussing them, at least on Twitter and on social media, and that filters across to mainstream press reports. So this is starting to again gin up the gun control discussions. You and I talked about this a few times.
There's two truths. One is, when the place is loaded with guns, you sure as hell can't tell the next person they can't have one when everybody else has got one, because you can't coach fear. You know, and if somebody's afraid, and somebody's driving around in the middle of the night in Chicago when people are shooting on the expressways, and somebody says, you know, I need something, you can't tell them no now, because you can't get it out of other people's hands, right? So, but then when you start talking about gun laws, I mean, and you talk about, you know, some of the people that have guns, it's very, you know, I'm going to be very straightforward this morning because I got my attorney with me. If you've got an IQ of 15 and you've got 15 felonies, you think that the barrier to get a gun should be an IQ of one below yours and 16 felonies, right? I mean, everybody thinks that they deserve to get a gun, but nobody else does. And look at some of the losers that pass these tests. I mean,
couple of points. Number one. There's no test. I mean, other than a background check.
Well, that's what I mean.
There's no test for anything other than, you know, you're not a felon or you know, declared incompetent or anything like that.
I didn't mean written test.
To
I meant
own a firearm.
I didn't mean written test. I meant what's the word? If it's not test, if you go to get a FOID card, there's certain things they look for. It's not a test. What do you call that?
But it's a background check.
Yes. But there's some things that top out, and let's put it this way: you don't pass, even though it's not a test. And if you're,
I mean,
yeah.
Again, all of the gun control efforts are meaningless with respect to the bulk of gun violence, which is occurring within communities and cultures that have absolutely no relationship to, you know, law-abiding behavior whatsoever.
Right. Right.
You know, I mean, I follow Chicago news pretty closely. And the number of cases of guys who have been arrested and then released because of your idiot no bail concept put in place by that goofy state's attorney that you've got there, Fox.
Yep.
The number of guys who have are committing multiple crimes involving guns, violence, whatever, is astounding to me and within a normal, rational electorate would never be tolerated.
Let me ask you this, though.
The efforts.
Wait.
Your point about the number of guns in the country is exactly correct. We will not get gun control in this country absent us turning into a complete police state. But that is, by the way, the purpose of most of, or the goal of most of the gun control advocates, which is the abolition of private ownership of firearms. But more importantly, given that we have so many guns in circulation, the only way we're going to control gun, quote-unquote, gun violence, and I'm not talking about suicides, I'm talking about gun violence, is by locking up the shooters. And we can control that, but nobody wants that.
Well,
at least not in Chicago. I distinctly remember them, Rahm Emanuel, trying to do this, putting a 2 to 3 year rider on all crimes involving illegal possession of a firearm or the use of a gun, and the alderman came to him and said, it's just going to mean more young black men in jail, and we're not going to support this.
Well, that's there's a yin and a yang here, Lou, and I mean, I think it's I think at the end of the day, and I don't know how it works out, I mean, because obviously we have economic problems, we got COVID problems, at the end of the day, I mean, long before you and I are passed, probably, I think the anti-gun group is going to win out in a big way, because I honestly believe, and again, this is just one man's opinion, that, you know, this and however many bucks it costs you to make a phone call now, if you could find a coin phone, I think that there's two sets of rights here. There's a right of somebody to own a gun, which I really don't dispute. It's also a right of somebody to not get shot, and it's up to the gun owners, because it's not like the guy's beating you up or calling you a weenie and punching you and something you could even at least fight back a little bit. I mean, I think the gun owners at this point, they've tried forever to have this. We're going to make sure only the right people get them and blah blah blah. The fact is, Lou, that's a total failure. And you're right. You could lock up the shooter, but my buddy Lou's still dead, and I miss him. I somehow want to interdict this before Lou gets shot, not after. I mean, because it's much more permanent than a punch in the nose, right? But there is a difference.
So you're talking about different problems, Chief. And
well, I know, I always do
the
that.
The problem of the lunatic shooter, e.g. this guy here in Boulder and the guy in Atlanta, the problem of the lunatic shooter is different than the problem of sort of generic gun violence that claims by far and away the vast majority of lives and injuries.
Let's tee this one up here for the break. But SP Futures down 250, NASDAQ Futures up 3. Not much of a bounce after yesterday. Be right back, Stacks and Jacks.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Stocks, jocks,
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now.
Blowing off base, Tyson Jacks. I'm Tom Allen. He's Mr. Matt Weber on the board. SP Futures now down 4, and NASDAQ Futures on 3.25. Dow Futures are unchanged because we've got a couple stocks in Dow that are up. Cisco's up 98 cents, and what else we got? McDonald's up a buck. We got Nike down 5.78, though. They had earnings. Actually, they did not have earnings. They had earnings last week. CRM is up 47 cents. That's through the rest of the world here, and then I got a couple of stocks here that I just happened to look at that... DAX down 35.2%, FTSE's down 17.2%, CAC around down 13.2%, nice and even across the board at 0.2%. Asia, Nikkei is up 324, these guys were down huge yesterday, it's 1.1%, I gotta believe, well they're closed so they haven't seen us come back down here. Shanghai down 3, call that flat, Hang Seng down 18, call that flat. Remember they were all down real heavy yesterday. Bonds, 161, it's unchanged, Bund minus 0.37, which is, you know, sinking lower again. Japanese 10-year positive 0.08, so that's actually up from the 0.06 yesterday morning. Oil, we've got oil down a buck 9, but it's still over, it's back over 60. 60.09, Brent up 92 cents, 63.49. Natural gas down a penny, 2.50. RBOB gas down 2 cents, 196. We've got gold, cannot get out of its own way, down buck 70, 17.31 is the whole number. Silver down 23 cents, 24.99, and every single person who's convinced that they know what's going on in the world is saying silver's going to be $50 this year, and it goes down every day. And I know that because I got some of it. Copper down 9 cents, 397. On crypto, we've got the Bitcoin down 2,200 to 52,676. Mitty, where did that top 65, you said?
Something like that. I think it was more like 66.
66? Yeah. Wow. What do you have? Oh, individual stocks. A couple weeks ago, maybe a week ago, I had mentioned on the show, because I don't usually do individual stocks, I just... was looking at an earnings play in two stocks, but I only talk about one of them. One is this Coupa Software, and the stock was like 355 or something. And I was saying, wow, you know, I just happened to check this one, and I said, no, do not take this as a, you know, as a investment advice, because I didn't do anything with it. I don't know anything about the company, but I noticed that it was like multiple times revenue, like way higher than some of the dot, you know, the dot bombs in 1999. Doesn't mean it couldn't have gone $100 higher. Well, the thing is down. It's trading this morning at 253, so it's down $100, $110 in like a week and a half. Same thing, the other one was Crowd, and same thing, they're now like $75 or something. So the carnage outside of what you see in the averages in the last few days has been really dramatic. Same stocks that were going way up a couple of months ago that people were making all the money on, that's the stuff that we normally report on. Those are the ones that are getting hit. Matty, what do you got for us? Trevor, go to sports.
36 minutes past the hour. Good morning to everyone out there. Off to a good start on the area expressways, roadways, and tollways. It looks like no issues on the Edens right now or the Kennedy. Eisenhower and Stevenson all quiet too. Same for the south side. Lakeshore Drive is quiet in both directions. We do have a couple of issues off the expressways. Looks like in Oak Park, Lombard Avenue between South Boulevard and Lake Street is closed due to railroad viaduct work. So you'll want to avoid that area. We also have a crash in the city, Pulaski Road at West Montrose. And then out in the western suburbs, there's a crash on Route 59 at Mack Road that's blocking the right lane. But everything else is all quiet out there. Weather today, it's going to be much cooler than it's been the last few days. We'll also have rain on and off in the forecast and a high of 46. Right now it's overcast and 45, so we'll stay right around here with some rain later on. For our Phoenix listeners, partly cloudy skies with a high of 74 today. Right now it's clear and 51. In sports, the Bulls not playing very well, Chief. They lost again last night, this time at home to Cleveland, 103-94.
Well, your buddies, Stacy and those guys, yeah, they had it in the layup column last night.
Yeah. Suns lost to the Magic, 112-111. In hockey, Blackhawks were off last night. They're back on the ice tonight at the UC, 7 p.m. puck drop against Coach Q and the Panthers. Chief.
Yeah, so many stacks that have gotten have whacked pretty good. By the way, now you think our buddy Lou, I know we have to talk here, is he one of the pro-business kind of right-wing dudes that would be, if you and I, Matty, designed a canal that would say 4 miles wide, would go build a ship that was 4 miles, 2 feet wide so it could get stuck in there?
You're talking about that Suez Canal situation? Isn't that unbelievable?
The canal's brand new. I mean, they made it wide how long ago? And the damn ship is wider to canal. It's like touching both sides.
I saw the satellite photo of that thing, and I went, "Are you kidding me?" It looked like a bad, you know, one of those videos of the bad parking job where they get the truck wedged in and, you know, in such a way that you can't back up and you can't go forward?
Yeah, I mean, he's at like a 30-degree angle, and he's pretty much touching both sides, and somehow they say he ran aground. I'm thinking there's no way he ran aground because the draft is the same all the way across. It means he ran into the side, and now he's aground because he hit the side of the canal. I mean, what the hell?
I mean, there was a reason we had a Panama Canal Zone for many years, and you know, I would be happy to see us have one again.
Well, yeah, but we're not going to get a Suez. So what is, you know how many containers are on that thing?
I have no idea.
Pick a number.
Okay. Let's see. I'll say 1,200.
20,000.
20,000 containers?
Yeah. The thing is something like 1,200 meters long.
No.
It's... 1,183 meters long or something is what I read yesterday. It's like the biggest container ship in the world.
1,183 meters. So the ship is 3,500 feet long?
Something like that, yeah.
It's more than half a mile long?
Yeah. I mean, I'll go back and... It's on CNBC. Let me see if I'll find it here someplace. But, yeah, the thing is... I mean, look at... The satellite view is spectacular. Did you see the satellite view?
Yeah, I did. I'm just thinking in terms of, you know, engineering. A boat that long, especially in any kind of rough sea, is gonna have a real some real engineering forces. You know, like moments of force put on its stern and bow.
I'm sorry, it's no, it's
flexes going through the water.
Not 1,300 feet long, 193 feet wide.
Yeah. All right. That sounds a little more manageable. Okay. how many containers? Still 20,000?
I think so. 200,000 tons.
That's not that big a boat.
It's one of the biggest. I mean, these things are how many?
Well,
there's how many containers stacked on top of the thing? I mean, they're not underneath anymore. They're stacked on top.
Well, that's true. I don't know. But, I mean, 20,000 containers sounds like an awful lot.
Yeah, I don't know if they're all full size. I mean, but...
Maybe it's 20,000. Maybe it's 20,000 containers, but the containers are matchbox sized.
I don't know about that, but... Anyway,
one way of getting your numbers up.
Anyway, the thing is pretty darn big. Just saying.
I saw that photo, and it's remarkable. Let me just finish up the thought we were having on
the
control issue, and we can kick it on. The vast majority of shootings in the United States are handguns, not rifles. Less than 400 people, 500 people a year are killed by long guns, including shotguns and rifles. Most of them are handgun shootings. Most of them mass shootings. excuse me, that we consider mass shootings. Are the results of things like gang violence?
All right, so when you say a mass shooting,
like Chicago, LA, or hotbeds of them.
I remember I started the show by saying, depending on what number you put in, what do you?
That's right.
When you say mass shooting, how many are you talking?
Well, the number that I see in the Washington Post is, you know, where four or more people are shot.
All right, so we have a few of those a month in Chicago.
I know. Oh no, I know.
Yeah.
So the vast majority of the quote gun violence death problems are not the lone shooter wandering into a place and shooting the place up. They are things like the murders you typically see in Chicago every day.
Yeah.
And so the issues with assault rifles and things like that are not where most of the problem is. Most of the problem is handguns, and if you want to control that, you're not going to control the handguns. There are, we just had, because of the incompetent local response, ideological in nature, to the whole riot situation last summer with Black Lives Matter and Antifa, and the idea that we're not going to prosecute these people, which is what happened in most major cities.
Yep.
There were like 8 million new gun owner purchases in the United States.
Well, you can't even get a, try getting a FOID card in Illinois. You're so backed up. I mean, it's scary.
Yeah. And so you know, you got all these people running out to get guns because they understand what's going on, and taking concealed carry courses. Every concealed carry course here in Colorado is full.
They are here too.
And I mean, even in places like Illinois where they try to make it really difficult, the option to get that or to be able to do that is increasingly in demand. So you're not going to be able to, there are more guns in circulation than there are people now, I think.
By far.
You're not
yeah.
going to be able to contain that. At least without door to door, you know, warrantless searches, confiscating whatever you find. And I think absent that, then we need to deal with the problem some other way. And again, if you shut down the guys who are the shooters, the guys who are carrying the weapons illegally, if you begin locking those people up, you will see the gun violence numbers start to drop. Because I know that, you know, in Chicago, there were studies done on this. You know, most of the shootings were done, the gun armed robberies, gun-related crimes were the result of something like 12,000 people.
Well, I read
identified.
If you didn't care about this is a while ago. I read this study.
Yep.
But I did read your part about
this was Jody Weiss's
right.
big data stuff.
Well, but what I'm saying is if this is a gun control article I wrote, a study I read, and said that if you just stopped, again, I said this doesn't address my idea that you have to tell, you know, somebody right now who feels afraid for the first time he can't have a gun when there's 90 bazillion of them out there, which I think is kind of a problem. It's a serious problem. But if you didn't care about that, Lou, this article basically said the idea that if you ban guns from sale, all right, if you ban guns from sale, or bullets, you know, whichever one, say guns, that in fact the amount of guns used in crime and that are confiscated every year, these are the guns that are in play. I mean, if you look at, you know, 200 million guns in the country, let's pick that number. Study basically
300 million.
Study basically said 280 of them are stuck in somebody's place in their house they can't even get to very quick. They have one, they feel secure, even though they couldn't get to it in time to do any good. They're going to stay in the safe. They're going to stay wherever they are. They're not going anywhere. But there's a amount of guns that are, quote, out there being used, that the amount of guns that are confiscated by police forces on a daily basis, that would dry up pretty fast. So you actually, I'm saying, you're going to say the guy just said statistically, the amount of let's say, real being used guns among bad people would dry up pretty fast because if they don't get new ones constantly, even the gangs in Chicago, I mean, if they're not constantly being resupplied, because every time somebody gets arrested, they at least take the gun.
They steal them. So they steal them.
Okay, but and the article addressed that. They said there's going to be people that, you know, people know have them in their car and they're going to bomb on it. But it said eventually, they basically said that there's 300 million guns, but really the number is a lot less. Because a lot of them are stuck in somebody's attic and they haven't been shot in 30 years. You know, and maybe, you know.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think that's. I don't know how likely that is, but that may be correct. But the bottom line is, if you ban the sale of guns, you simply introduce a huge black market. We are not set up to police the kind of bypass legal avenue system that would be set up to deal with a total ban on gun sales. First of all, it wouldn't pass constitutional muster.
Right.
But even if it did, the next thing you have would be a huge black market, and I mean, it would be like drug smuggling.
Well, Lou, I think
it would be easier.
You know, you and I have talked, and we don't want to spend too much time on this about, you know, legality versus morality. And when you say you can't enforce, I'm going to say that, in my best estimate, no matter what you have, policemen, whether you beat people in the town square, whether you put them in stocks, whether you execute them, whatever it is. Your law enforcement system is designed or can be designed to deal with what one person out of a thousand is that's a, you know, what do they used to say in Rocky and Bullwinkle, he's a no good Nick. When you start talking about a significant percentage of a population in some areas, either all have guns, they're all running around, they're all doing drugs, they're all doing whatever it is they're doing, I don't think that you can possibly enforce all that. I mean, I honestly don't. I mean, it overwhelms the system. It's like, you know, when every company now has no problems calling up their competitor and buying the place, you know, when the Canadian National can just call Kansas City Southern and say, we'd like to take you guys over, this long negotiation before. I mean, Lou, if that's all okay, I don't see how the hell you ever have an antitrust department. I don't see how you ever have a tax. The IRS ever comes back on anybody, except the low-hanging fruit that you can go kill because they can't defend themselves. I mean, we're at the stage here where it's almost like we're becoming unenforceable as a nation. And I don't know how you deal with that. I mean, yesterday I listened to Janet Yellen. I didn't send it out to you, but I sent the recipe. I don't have your, lucky for you, I don't have your email on the one I use from home. I just shudder at the idea that Janet Yellen is now saying that banks can go buy their stock back. When in the 2 years or 3 years she was out of office, she got $1 million in speaking engagements from Citigroup. Lou, if we don't have enough people in this country that say she has no business in that job after taking $1 million from somebody she's now regulating, Lou, if I can't get that message across to anybody, I might as well give up. I mean, nobody thinks that's even a problem. I mean, how is it not a problem? I mean, but I'm just talking about stuff I know better. I mean, the stuff, gang warfare, I mean, I see it, but I don't know much about it. But I mean, and I don't know what motivates somebody to go kill 10 people in a food store either. But this other stuff, it's almost like we've become immune to any sort of morality here whatsoever. Or is it just me? Or was it always like that, and I'm just seeing it more?
I think it was always like that, and you're just seeing it more. It's like media bias. It's always been there. We just, you know, the curtain doesn't get pulled back wasn't getting pulled back that often. Now with alternative sources in place, it's there. I mean, come on, Chief. You had an Illinois senator 2 days ago basically say she's a racist and she's going to enforce racist principles in terms of what nominees she's going to support. Now she's walked it back a little bit, but Duckworth just flat out said, I'm not going to support anybody who's white. And I was almost said normal, but who's white and not gay, not homosexual, for any position until I see more Asians in here.
Well,
and
no, she said.
You know, I mean,
she said
that,
it.
That
she
was
said
a mic drop.
She said it. She said it differently, because got to hope nobody goes back through all the stuff I say and take it out of context. But we went through about 3 weeks on the. I don't know, it was Black Something Something Month, and everybody talked about, you know, more minorities on boards, but it was all black people. You know, what they really meant is all black people on boards. And I made the comment a couple days when I said, now do Asians or Indians, American Indians or anybody, do they count, or is every minority now being defined as a black female? And I think Tammy Duckworth, maybe not as, I mean, she basically said the same thing. I don't see an Asian anywhere. Don't they count? I mean, because it's not about being a minority.
Well, no, what
it's about it's about advantage.
She was going to reject any white heterosexual candidate that was nominated for any position that they had to affirm without seeing, you know, more people picked solely according to their race.
What I would have said if it was me, I would have said, with what's going on here, and I would say I'm not. We have all these white people that have always been there. Now we got all these black people that have got their way in there. And by the way, if we don't get an Asian person there somewhere, I'm not voting for anybody else. That's probably what I would have said, because the Asians are being left out.
She didn't say I'm not voting for anybody else. She said I'm not voting for any white.
Well, that's right.
White, homosexual candidate.
What she should have said is the Asians and American Indians. Actually, we've got a couple of American Indians that have been put in cabinet positions, which is a good thing. Native Americans. I mean, she should have said the Asians.
As long as they were qualified.
Yeah. No, I'm with you on that. But we know the Asians are qualified because we're having lawsuits to keep them out of Harvard because the only people are getting in, right?
So this goes back to the point you were making. But you know, I think it's always been this way, and I think the curtain comes off. You know, at some point, but you know, every now and then somebody's runs their mouth a little too much, and I think that's what happened with old Tammy.
Well, I wish I could. I have the oddest memory, Lou. I can remember substance of everything, and I can't remember either the year or the person that said it. I remember this was an article. I think I was still in college, University of Chicago, had to do with minorities. And it said basically, when you're really a minority and you're getting basically the crap kicked out of you all over the place, which black people certainly have. I mean, Asians certainly have. I mean, the Irish for a while certainly have, even though they were white. I don't think the Polish did so well when they first got here, but the Irish were worse because
the Italians.
I think the Irish were worse because they dug canals, and I think the absolute worst were the Asians that dug did the railroads. They didn't even care if they died. I mean, they 15 people in an avalanche. Well, we'll catch them in spring if the bodies are still there. I mean, it was really bad in terms of deaths anyway. But what I'm saying is, and this guy was a graduate level paper that he wrote regarding a minority before a minority can get to the point where they're quote minority status. They almost have to achieve a level that where they're not even really a minority anymore, to where they have the money to get themselves out in front of the camera, to get the attorneys, to file the lawsuits. I mean, he says he says, obviously the African Americans have made great strides. I mean, of course, the South, the way South treated those people or other people is crazy, but he said they almost had to reach a stage that where they were improving anyway, just to get it to be recognized. To where people says because his story was he was essentially taking African Americans versus Indians, Native American Indians, and he was saying that the African Americans have reached a stage now where they this is Martin Luther King's time, they have a leader, a terrific leader, they have some money, they have some press that's working with them, but the Indians got nobody. They're a real minority. Nobody even cares about them. Nobody knows they're alive.
Well, they are a special case in the sense that the Native American tribes are allowed to self-segregate within the jurisdiction of reservations and over in which they have virtual control.
Yeah.
I don't trust me. If you're a Native American and you think you've been discriminated against at work, you're not going to have any trouble. You've got, a good faith basis for that. You're not going to have trouble finding a lawyer.
Well,
you don't need a national leader. You're not going to have trouble finding a lawyer.
This is a 30-year-old article. His point was if you're really downtrodden, you're just downtrodden. It's on the way up that you can start making some noise, that you make the improvements, that you get people looking at your cause and so forth. Right? I mean, nobody cares about all the homeless people in the city until two or three people get on and they start talking about it. And if they had some kind of a leader that would say, look, we all had jobs, we all had this, we all got tossed, here's how much, there's no place here to stay. I mean, you have to be able to appeal to people, right, Lou? You have to, and that takes some sort of resources, either money or somebody who's a real, you need a Caesar, you need a Moses, you need a Martin Luther King, you need somebody like that. I mean, it just doesn't happen, right, because nobody cares to look. Is what I'm saying.
I think, again, trying to capture what we were talking about. I think that within communities like this, you have to have, I won't say some kind of focus, but there has to be an awareness of the issue that causes people to react to it. In ways that are different from the normal statutory or legal response. Homelessness, unfortunately, became a political issue during the Reagan administration, where they just kept saying, there's going to be 10 million homeless people in the United States as a result of the Reagan administration. The minute the Republicans went out of power, that all disappeared. Nobody talked about it anymore. Nobody talked about homelessness under Bill Clinton.
Right. Oh, yeah.
And so. This stuff gets, if you're cynical, and I am, this stuff becomes, the cause du jour, and then it disappears.
Well,
the white supremacy shooter got a big push from this guy in Atlanta, even though there's no particular evidence for that. And they were getting ready to jump on this guy here in Boulder, but it turns out that he's not white. So then at that point, all disappears. And so you look at it and you go, well, whatever social cause I'm hearing or I'm being bombarded with today is the result of somebody manipulating or trying to manipulate the press or social media to get attention for some purpose. And once that purpose is achieved, this issue will disappear from our media consciousness.
Although it,
and that's what I think.
I'm not supposed to agree with you, but there's levels of minorities and discrimination. I mean, if you were here, we could drive, we go into suburban, people think we're cops. We could drive through Inglewood, and there's gonna be some churches, there's gonna be, which, you know, good thing. There's gonna be a bunch of gangbangers, there's gonna be people in the middle of the street that are selling drugs that you and I can identify in a second. And there's gonna be on every block that has, you know, 10 empty lots and 10 boarded up buildings, there's gonna be 10 houses where regular people are trying to make a life. And they get zero press. I've never seen a day in a life in a regular family trying to live in Inglewood. As the daughter walks to the store, or walks to school past three gangbangers with a, in the middle of the street with 15 idiots buying drugs from them and a bullet whizzing overhead. I've never seen that group within the African American community has no leadership. Now, the people that are on the money side, the people with their finger in the pie, the people in politics and the preachers, some of the preachers, not all, they clearly have a voice. They're making all the dough. But I don't see anybody caring about the family there, do you?
I mean, I see stories about that occasionally, but generally, the person who's keeping their head down, doing their job, just trying to get along, following the law, no. They don't get the attention.
No.
And frankly, as you and I have discussed many times, people want an explanation for Donald Trump. There it is.
Yep. Oh, yeah. All right, Lou. Talk to you next week, buddy. Keep your head down out there in that place. Are you going to send us a picture, your new snowblower?
If I get a snowfall big enough to use it, yeah.
Well, your dad coached up in Minnesota. They'll let you call in to trick my blower.
I may put antlers on it.
Well, you got to say what's in it. Man, I got four horse. What do you got? You know, type of thing. You got to get the accent first. Take care.
I'll mount a snow maker on top of it.
We'll put a mortar on top of it, a fake mortar. We think you're like some, you know, one of those kind of guys. SP Futures down 17. The SP Futures down 60. We're looking for a bouncer. I don't see it yet. Dow was up 200 at one point. Not anymore. We'll be right back. Stacks and Jacks.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI Pro Direct can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI Pro Direct. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com. PTIProDirect.com.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Hear ye, hear ye! The Homer Broadcasting System is on the air!
Stocks, jocks,
stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control!
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Hello and welcome back to Stacks and Jacks. I'm Tom Howell. This is Matt Weber on the board. SP Futures down 14. NASDAQ Futures down 44. We were up in the S&Ps when we came in. Dow was up 200 points at one point last night. Maybe you see where Illinois State said no masks on their football season, huh? After four games? Not enough people? Maybe you saw that or not, but how many teams are playing? Football. Is it been one of the conferences? I don't even know. Dan, how are you? We'll worry about football later. With you here, we got to talk about finance and stuff and the rates. The rates are going the other way. Is it a chance for everybody to reload to the downside in these bands or what? Or is this, or what are we doing here?
Yeah, I think this is a little bit of an aberration this week. And as you know, nothing goes up or down in a straight line. In our business, so I think this is just we're seeing somewhat of an aberration, the 10-year yield moved up fairly quickly from the beginning of the year. I mean, the treasury market, if you will, down 4 or 5%. It was a pretty quick run, and this is just partly a settling back, I think, or a little bit of a mini correction, if you will. There's some concern, obviously, about the commodities have been down this week, which has not helped. There's the interest, if you will, in investing in the now higher yielding U.S. Treasury bonds, which I think is too soon to be making this call or to be investing in our the 10-year at 1.75, but it certainly doesn't look more attractive at 1.60. So I think we're still going to be on this trend of higher rates. I think we're on this long cyclical trend, secular trend, I should say, in the credit cycle of rates going higher. I think we're still in the mature part of the business cycle. And during the mature part of the business cycle, we start seeing inflation and we start seeing higher rates. So that is, I still think, the premise of what's going on. And day-to-day news, I think, is driving the market a little bit here and there. Certainly we've seen, yesterday we had Yellen and Powell again speaking, and there's still not, and now I guess more, we're getting some more talk about tax hikes and all that, which are going to have a muted effect on the market. In other words, there's going to be some people who are when they hear that news of even higher tax rates, are going to be concerned and want to lighten up on their equities and put money back into bonds. I don't know. I think this is a very short-term effect. I don't think this is a trend that is happening. And I also really don't think it has a lot of legs. I think the Bernie Sanders call on going back to 35% in corporates is just not going to happen. I think in my mind, what we're focused on is still sort of any good news that comes out of continued spending, and the good news that comes out of it would be on the infrastructure side, which has been in talks for a long time and seems to have a lot of support. And I think that news is going to continue to take us in an environment of higher rates. I think the vaccine is still, it's making good progress. There are some variants out there, but I think we still need to stay focused on the vaccine, because that's really, as more and more people are vaccinated, and I actually had my shot yesterday, just have a little more comfort in knowing that we're getting through this, and it seems in some ways we're getting through this quicker than we anticipated. So lots of people are traveling already, and although we're not out of the woods altogether, we're quite a ways out of the woods, and there's certainly a bright future. On top of that, what I'll say is I've been at a conference the last few days. Sidoti's having their one of their conferences, and we talked directly to the senior management of the companies, and they have quite a few industrial companies, what I would call mini conglomerates, because they're mostly smaller companies. And there's actually a couple that are in the Chicago area, including one called Federal Signal that I was impressed with. And the news, the message that I'm getting from the CEOs of these companies is consistent. It's a message of safety. It's a message of continued infrastructure spending that's going to benefit these businesses. It's a message of demand continuing to pick up in 2022 and 2023 in the industrial area. So this has been the shift, and although we may have had a week of here of setback, I think that's still the longer term path that we're taking here, and it's that's where our focus is, and you know, we're seeing value in some of these industrial names that have been left behind from the tech run up, and also maybe some more stability in these names, as these companies now today are really managing their balance sheets well, they're managing their acquisitions well. Free cash flow is very important to us, and we're hearing that a lot more. In general, I think the trend is we're going to continue to see higher rates. We are going to continue to see better economic growth over the rest of this year and into next year. And it would take something like a really, major event to knock us off from that. And I don't think anybody believes that we're going to see 35% tax rate again. I mean, it's 25%. I think is more likely, maybe 28%. And that's somewhat built into the market already, but we try to kind of keep that noise to the side and not get you caught up in the day-to-day noise and really look at the
big
picture and what is working and what does seem to have support, and what CEOs are saying is working for them as well.
Well, on the tax front, again, I was talking to Lou about gun control, I'm just trying to read the political winds. I'm trying to be Claude Rains for a second. And I think on the tax part, I mean, you and I, when it comes down to basics in terms of what should happen, I'm going to say we 100% agree, probably. But I think what the powers that are moving right now, and you look at the Bernie Sanderses and the AOCs, and I don't like any of their solutions, to be honest with you. Never did, even though some people are telling me I'm moving way to the first. I got half the people telling me I moved to the left and half telling me I'm too far to the right. So where does that put me? I'm not exactly sure, damn it. Somewhere along the line here, the corporate rate is a lot lower than other people's. Now doesn't count the dividends, which, I mean, for 50 years since, 40 years since I got out of grad school, I have wanted a fairer tax code, where I think everybody should pay the same amount, and that a company should pay the same amount that people do, and if they pay a dividend, they should get a credit back, because then the amount the person pays plus the amount the company pays should total up to the amount that everybody else pays. So there should be no incentive to be a Berkshire Hathaway and never pay a dividend. I think that's a horrible thing, and my professors in grad school thought it was a horrible thing, and it was a long time ago, and it's still there. But
I agree.
But what I would say, kind of to you, as I was saying to Lou, is the reason why the AOCs and the Bernies have momentum is some combination between the lower corporate rate than regular people, a combination that the big ones obviously pay off and don't pay. When I say pay off, it's a bad term. I don't know who they're paying off. The bottom line is they're not paying what they're supposed to pay. And when you look at the tax returns of the federal government, and the size of these corporations and the amount of money they're making, even in the COVID part, and again, I'm not being Mr. Liberal here, the fact that it's only 7% of the income tax is outrageous.
I agree. Yes,
the combination of all that, hiding it in Europe for 20 years and not bringing all of it back. Actually, if you really dig deep, despite what Trump said he did and the Republicans, it's more advantageous to keep your money overseas now than before that bill was passed, from what I understand. So the idea that out of all his money that Amazon's paying like nothing or 2%, and the entire of all these huge companies that own the damn whole country right now are paying 7%, I'll tell you what, most people are saying that's wrong. Now, when you let that happen, then you let people like Bernie and AOC and Elizabeth Warren come up with all kinds of crazy ideas, because there's something they see that's wrong. That's wrong. I mean, right? Am I wrong? What do you think?
Yeah, it's kind of the two extremes. You know, you're talking about, companies, and I know like you can add McDonald's to that list as well, that have managed to get away with, paying next to nothing in taxes. And if the corporate tax rate is 21%, they're not even close to that. And the winners, if you will, in the market have been the names that have kept their, have managed to, not pay taxes. So I would agree with you that on that side, that's one extreme. And I think they're coming on the other extreme, and maybe we need that in order to come someplace in the middle. I do think consensus, though, and what's built into the market is already something in the middle. And I think this started long before Biden got in office. I think this has started during Trump's administration, and it's continued that there has to be a balance that's equal, like you said, and I agree with you. I'm in the same camp, the same mindset, that this should be a consistent rate across the board. It just makes life easier, and you're not going to have to worry about the, you know, if suddenly Amazon has to start paying higher taxes, whether we're going to get fewer deliveries or, you know, that I don't think we need to be worrying about, you know, jobs being lost because of higher taxes. I think there has to be a balance to sort of keep the company in their growth, you know, in their growth trend, and especially if they are doing well and providing great products and services and that we need right now. I think we can only continue to encourage that, but it is balancing that with making sure that there's some equity in the, you know, some equality, if you will, or some equity in the,
well, there isn't,
in the way taxes are paid.
I mean, there totally isn't. I mean, we have the entire healthcare system has been based on the fact that, one of the biggest social screw ups in my mind is the entire insurance industry, pretty much, is based on the fact that, health insurance is deductible for a corporation and not for an individual. I mean, how can that stand for 100 years? I mean, what has that done to screw everybody up? I mean, God help you if you're paying your own stuff. I mean, what do you got to make a year to pay your own insurance and your own deductible?
The one thing there that I don't think is advertised enough, or I don't think is out there enough, is that small business owners have the ability to write off their, to deduct their, health insurance as well, and there's a, you know, the benefit there that I think, I mean, it needs work. There's no question.
And how many people do you run into a year? And we'll talk about some of these companies. How many people do you run into a year that are sole props, and you don't want to say something at a cocktail party or a coffee clutch, but say, hey, buddy, you some kind of moron? How come you're not your own personal corp and paying for all that stuff and deductible?
Yes. I know exactly what you're talking about. I've actually helped several people start their own business for that reason and then set up an IRA,
yeah.
That may have been, just a property manager at a development that where I was living, and he was just a good guy, and, you know, his wife was in college, and he had a couple of kids that he was kind of struggling, and I said, look, you know, here's a way that you can shelter some of that cash by setting up a simple SEP IRA, but you got to get incorporated. So that is an option. That isn't spread. I don't think every accountant is telling their person, and maybe some of these guys aren't going to accountants, but that's an option that we have out there, and there still needs to be work on that. I think there still needs to be
more support for the
small business guy.
Shifting to the markets more, because you know more about these companies than me. I did mentioned earlier, I was doing some earnings play looks and Crowd and what's the other one? Coop. And to be honest with you, I don't know much about either one of these people do. And I was just mentioning on the air that day that, boy, these guys are like a bazillion times revenue, not just, you know, and obviously people like these companies and the cloud's the future and stuff, so I'm not the expert for sure, but both of those stocks are down like $100 and $80 like in the last week. So
yes.
The carnage in the market is, you know, you can see the NASDAQ going down every day, but these stocks that maybe you and I, well, you more than me, never talked about, that all these people, the modern investors, the younger investors, are all involved in, they were going to the moon and they were making a fortune. They weren't even the stuff that I even look at, much less trade for my clients. And now those things are all getting hammered this week. I mean, is it that way across the board? I know we have some people here that do actually have a basket of all the stocks that are involved in electric cars, and they've been doing really well for a while. But now this week, it reminds me, talk about this, politics. When Trump came into office, he was gonna do everything in the world to help the steel companies. And as soon as the guy got in, all he did was go straight down. Since Biden's been in, the massive friend of electronic cars and alternative energy, those stocks have done is go straight down. What is the deal with that? I have no idea. Maybe you could explain it.
Yeah, I think on the latter one, on the electric cars, that there's been a huge rally in recent years. And so I think there's somewhat of a correction, and I was going to say for some of the younger investors who've really only seen a market go in one direction for the last decade, other than, you know, with the exception of the COVID period, which I think can be taken out or have to be taken out, I think, if you look at the long-term cycle. But the, you know, they're kind of getting an understanding and maybe having to learn a little humility in the market that it's, everything doesn't go straight up and that, you know, stocks do get overvalued and you can get excited about something, but you can't get too excited about it. You have to have a reasonable valuation, in order to, you know, make sense, a reasonable price. You know, buying at a reasonable price in order to make sense, to make money, I should say, not to make sense, to make money, not cents and dollars. Actually, you want to make, so there's a, yeah, there is a trend, and we noticed that some names, like Cuervo is a name that we have on that side that is done well. Grixendo is another name that, you know, does cloud, for telecommunications. So they're, you know, they've been volatile, they kind of trade anywhere between 6 and 8. So when they start getting to 8, we're sellers, and they start getting below 6, we're buyers. That's not our style in general, but that seems to be the way you've got to play that sector. And that's not, again, you know, our style is more to buy these, industrial names that are, paying dividends, that have free cash flow, that are good long-term players, that are going to benefit from infrastructure spending, that have kept themselves well managed and well positioned throughout the pandemic and haven't lost any money during this period and actually have kind of restructured themselves in a way to be even more profitable going forward. So there is this sort of rotation that has taken place, and then we have a week like we've had this week where a lot of it doesn't make sense. The other area that I'll say that it's sold off with all these names are the commodities. So we've seen oil coming down, silver and gold coming down. Wouldn't be a bad time to pick up a little bit of silver and gold in here, if you had positions there. Wouldn't be a bad time to maybe add to some of those names that you like on the tech side. You know, when we're talking about the bond side, the names that have really done well during this period, I mean, all of our bonds have done well, but the preferred stock, we talked about some of the preferreds like the Blue Knights and the Chicken Soup for the Soul and even the REIT, SELF, they've actually done very well during this period. And, you know, we have been saying for months that they're going to be a nice, place to put some cash and get some really good yield during a period that could be, up and down in the market based on where we see, you know, what kind of Fed action or lack of action we see going forward and what we see for inflation. So these names will do well in either of those environments, and they're not going to be trading up and down with the same kind of volatility that tech has or that even some of the fixed income now, like 10-year fixed income names have, you know, seen that level of volatility that we haven't seen in such a long time.
Dan, are you worried at all about some of the ones you've named? I think are sufficiently, I'll use the term, out of the mix, but I mean, right now, with what I've seen this action in this NASDAQ the last few days, or certainly a few days out of the last, you know, maybe 8 out of the last 10, it's, are you starting to worry that even if you pick, you know, the next, Google or something, that, you know, we come into the morning and these NASDAQ futures are down 100 points. I mean, nobody's caring what they're selling. I mean, you're gonna take a hit even if you buy, quote, one of the good ones, if we keep sliding.
They'll trade down in sympathy, and we know that because we're in an ETF world right now that this is a new world, if you will, going back to our last major downturn, last major financial crisis in 08. ETFs represented a very small portion of the market, and now they represent a very large portion. So when someone is selling an ETF like an ARK, Cathie Wood's ARK, which we've owned in the past, we've owned for a few years, and is a good way of having diversification, but you're selling everything. So you're selling you're getting out of your Tesla, but you're also getting out of your Square, and you're getting out of all the other names at the same time. So just by the structure of these ETFs, everything is going to trade down simply.
Well, so the ETF is just a modern iteration of when I was trading the OEX, it was the basket.
Right. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. Or mutual fund, you know, that had a sector specific. But it's I think because these are so transparent. You know, when you're buying a mutual fund, you didn't necessarily know. Everything is so transparent today, so that you know you know, you have exposure to, say, 30 different stocks in the innovation sector, and then, you know, you might say, hey, I like the news on this one, I don't like the news on that one. You really need to be buying these individual stocks. I have a manager who does their homework on these. Otherwise, you are going to go down with the herd, you know, anytime there's a sell-off in the sector.
Well,
that's what's happening this past week. You know, it's definitely what's been happening the past
week. Well, that's every strategy, that's the interesting part. It's always when I, you know, usually it's younger people, but maybe smarter than me, but they'll say, here's my strategy, and explain it to me, and I go, no matter, I'm smart enough at this point, I've seen them all, that it doesn't mean I can pick the right one. If I could pick the right one the whole time, I don't know where I'd be. I'd be in, where's Princess Monaco? I'd be over in Monaco or someplace. Whatever the strategy is, there's a hole in it. And one of the groups that I do business with, had a strategy, and they, I won't go into it because people know who the hell it is, but it basically, they buy stocks that they like a lot, that they think are going to overperform, and then they protect the whole portfolio with some generalized puts in that area. So if they're high tech, they're going to buy some QQQ puts or something like that. So the idea is that your stocks are going to outperform the other stuff, and if the whole world takes a dump, you more than cover it with the puts, because your stocks are going to go down 5%, your puts are going to cover the 10% down in the market, and you're going to come out a winner. And that's worked for a real long time. Now all of a sudden, those individual stocks that everybody thought were the good ones are taking it where the sun don't shine, and the markets are relatively steady, or they were until a couple of weeks ago. So that happened. Real quick story, Dan, I'm boring the hell out of you, I think, but, back in, remember the XMI?
Yes, yeah.
But is that thing still trade?
I think so.
The XMI was the, when the S&Ps came out, the S&P 500, the CBOE missed the boat, so they came out with the OEX, which ended up being, the most highly traded options, like, ever at the time. Well, the MX, American Stock Exchange, is, you know, on the outside looking in, so they developed the XMI, which was 20 stacks, right, I believe? 20 of the biggest American Stock Exchange stacks. Well, during the Gulf War I, that's how far back this was, it was really bizarre, because the indexes were actually a higher implied volatility than the individual stacks.
Yeah.
So
exactly.
What I did was I put big ratio spreads on where I was buying premium. In other words, if the delta of the option was 50, I was buying 200 of the options and selling 100,000 shares of stock, right? And I've been doing a 2-for-1. But then I was selling premium in the XMI because it was really high. And at the end of the day, we ended up making a really nice return on it, Dan. But, you know, because it's just the way I am, I went through the 20 stacks. If we would have missed two of them, we'd have gotten our ass kicked. Because if I would have said, don't worry about American Express, or I forget what the other one was. Was it Exxon or something? Anyway, out of the 20, instead of them all being down, a few of them were actually up a little bit. About five or six of them were unchanged. And, you know, maybe eight of them were down, and two of them got annihilated, American Express being one of them. It was down like 25%. So if I wouldn't have done American Express, I would have actually gotten killed. So when you talk about selling a whole group of stocks because they're in the, at least the mutual funds have an ability to pick the stocks they sell. They don't necessarily, if you sell the fund, they can pick the stocks. Now, whether they do a good job of that or not. But if you sell the S&P future, I mean, and you and I are running a basket, we're going to sell those, however many stocks are in our basket. Say, what do you think we would have? 150, maybe 90? Wouldn't be all 500, because some of them don't mean anything. In terms of,
right.
So but we're going to sell those 90 stacks. We don't care if they're the good-looking girl. We're selling her, right? I mean, we don't care. That's just our formula.
They all go out, right?
They all go out, which is what you're talking about. I'm just saying this isn't new necessarily.
No, and I think the thing is, again, we've become so short-term focused. I mean, our clients are long-term focused, and if your goal is to be long-term focused, trying to do these trades, you know, leave it up to the experts, you know, because it's very difficult to stay on top of this and really, like you said, to drill down into what's in these ETFs and really understand what the impact is going to be, with having that level of exposure. So I would just say, you know, in general on the fixed income side, stay away from the, you know, longer term, you know, high quality, whether it be treasuries or high quality corporates, just because the likelihood is that we're on a trend of seeing higher rates. And we've had an aberration this week. You know, we've had a little bit of a change this week, but that, you know, we're going to continue with higher rates, I believe, as time goes on. And stay with short-term high yield, short-term emerging markets. Floating rate notes make sense. We had talked about a couple of ETFs like the high yield HYZD, zero duration. So those will be, you know, protect you in an environment like this. And then, you know, high yield, some short-term high yield munis, SHYD is a way to gain exposure there. There is value still. The spreads are still wide enough to make money in this environment. We haven't reached in corporates and high yield and even in the high yield munis, we have not reached the top of the market, if you will. But just don't, you know, but just make sure your duration, you're keeping your duration short, so you can avoid interest rate risk. And that's really where, you know, that would be the, I'd say the major risk that we have right now. On the equity side, I think there's more upside, especially in the niche players that we look at and some of the smaller names that are gonna benefit from, say, infrastructure spending, that are not gonna be trading with the tech names. You know, they're not gonna have the same kind of volatility as the tech, but they have some nice upside potential, and you may see those names creep up on some days when, you know, the tech names are down. So it's you know, they're a good alternative and also a good diversifier in this environment.
It's almost at a point, Dan, where we want to take somebody like yours, 2020 best picks in the tech area, buy those stocks and buy Q puts.
Yeah, I mean,
figuring that your stuff is going to do better, and if the market gets collapsed, we'll be okay. You know, and if you're right, but I don't think there's any. I mean, you're certainly not saying that if you have five really good stocks now and the market corrects 10%, that 3 weeks from now you're going to be up. I mean, your stocks have to be really, really good for that to happen.
Well, I think doing our homework and meeting with management and kind of doing the extra level of research definitely pays off. You know, having a direct voice with management makes sense. I think management, you know, having been in the middle of, you know, this conference the last few days, it's, you get a lot of questions answered about the specific company, but you also get a lot of questions answered about the industry and what they're seeing, for example, in China, because they have manufacturing facilities there, and what they're seeing in Europe, in terms of demand, because they have a client base there. So we really like the input, and we really do think it gives us a leg up to have that direct input from management. And although they are, in a sense, always trying to sell themselves, you know, having been doing this for 35 years, I can kind of read through that. So we want companies, and they know this, that if you're a long-term investor, they're going to have to give us the straight scoop, and the ones that have forecasted their niche or their market or their sector good are the ones that tend to outperform, and those are the ones you stay with.
Well, Dan, you're in the South Side vernacular, Dan, we got to go. You like stocks that if they go down, you want to buy more and not wonder why you bought it in the first place.
Right. Exactly.
And, you know, and that's the names you bring up, they're good stuff. And anyway, thank you very much, buddy. SP Futures now down 13, NASDAQ down 56. Way different than when we walked in. We'll be right back, Stocks and Jacks.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you're aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. At PTI, we've always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTISecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTISecurities.com.
Stocks, jocks,
stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Hello and welcome to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Howell. He's Mr. Matt Weber. And a new trainee on the board. S&P futures down 1250. NASDAQ futures down 5175. Dow futures down 106. Dow was up 200 earlier, according to the headline. I didn't see that in the middle of the night, but I'll take their word for it. DAX down 150 now. That's a full 1%. These guys have dropped precipitously in the last hour. FTSE down 74. That's 1.1%. CAC down 49, that's 0.8%. Last time we did this, they were down 0.2, so they've dropped pretty much. We're in Asia, and these guys can't drop, but they're closed. Nikkei up 324, bouncing back from Big Salt the day before. It's 1.1%. Shanghai down 3, call that flat. And Hang Seng down 18, call that flat. Bonds, 1.6. They're down from the 1.74, but they're also up from where they were for a long time. Bund minus 0.37 as they continue to go lower, which is more negative, so that's lower. Japan, positive 0.08. The UK is a positive 0.73, down 3 basis points. Oil, down $1.83, now under 60, 59.35. Brent down 180, 62.61. Natural gas down a penny, 2.50. RBOB is down 5 cents at 193. We've got gold down 4.60, 17.28. Silver down 55 cents, 24.68. Copper down 8 cents, 3.97, under $4 for the first time in a while. And we've got crypto down or down too. Bitcoin's down $4,200 to $50,666. What do you guys got? Traffic, weather, sports.
37 minutes past the hour. Good morning once again to everyone out there. Looks like we have a significant crash on the outbound Stevenson just before Illinois 53. That's exit 267. The crash is blocking the right lane. State police are also reporting a car fire on the southbound frontage road as well. So expect heavy congestion, stop-and-go traffic on the outbound Stevenson. It also slows down significantly on the inbound side due to gapers to that southbound crash. So lots of congestion on the Stevenson. This is out near Bolingbrook and Illinois 53. Just north of there in Naperville, there's a crash on the Reagan Memorial I-88 eastbound tollway just before Winfield Road. That crash has been moved to the right shoulder, but there's some congestion from that. If you're coming in from the south side, no issues on the Ryan. We did have an earlier crash on the outbound Bishop Ford just before 115th Street. That is clear, it looks like, but there's still some resulting congestion on the outbound side. I-57 looks okay. Further into downtown on I-55 is clear. That crash
that we mentioned is out southwest near Bolingbrook, but as you get near Cicero and closer into downtown, the Stevenson is not too bad. Eisenhower as well, not too bad. Edens and Kennedy have been quiet all morning. Lakeshore Drive is looking good. Off the expressways, looks like we have one other crash here. Roselle Road at Maple Avenue, there is an accident. But everything else looking okay out there. Weather today, lots of clouds early. Could have some rain later on as well. Much cooler today, a high of just 46. Right now it's overcast and 45 degrees downtown. For our Phoenix listeners, partly cloudy skies with a high of 74. Right now it's clear and 52. In sports, the Bulls lost at home last night to Cleveland, 103-94. Suns lost to the Magic, 112-111. And in hockey, the Blackhawks were off last night. They're back in action tonight as the Florida Panthers are back in town. Hawks versus Panthers, 7 p.m. puck drop tonight. Chief.
We have Frank?
Yeah, I'm here.
What's up, man? How are you?
Trying to figure out if the Bulls are going to get rid of anybody tonight.
You're supposed to say, are they going to get anybody to make a run? No.
It's still Chicago management until proven otherwise.
NBA trade deadline is today. Frank is correct. I actually like this Bulls management, but we'll see how they do.
Oh, I love them. I mean, they hired Donovan, didn't they?
Yeah, I think Donovan was a good hire. I think Patrick Williams was a good draft pick so far. We'll see how they handle this trade deadline. Their first one.
What do you think, Matty? Levine is saying that they've got enough to improve internally to they can compete.
Well, I think they do. I mean, if they were playing better like they were before the All-Star break, if they were playing, you know, better, I would say, hey, this team could make the playoffs as it stands right now. That would be a nice accomplishment for a young core. You know, let them do it. But they've been playing horrible for the last 2 weeks.
They lost to Cleveland.
Yeah, they lost to Cleveland at home last night, for God's sake. There's really nothing. You know, there's no run to be made here, so I would have no problem if they think they can get some assets for anything that they have right now.
Well, what would you get if you traded one of those trades I saw was Boston doesn't have any depth on their bench in the front line. They might want Thaddeus Young. They might want somebody else.
Yeah, a lot of teams want Thaddeus Young.
Now what would you get for him? And anything that could help you?
Not much. It would probably be a pick, and I don't even know if it would be a high pick. So it.
I heard on another channel, not to be named, that he's a potential first-rounder pick.
Yeah.
High first round.
You might be able to get a first-round
pick. I'm meaning high, you know, low, I should say.
Right, like end of first round. Yeah, you're not getting a lottery pick for Thaddeus Young.
No,
but...
But
a first round pick's not bad.
A late first round pick is something, and you can parlay that with something else and maybe turn it into, you know, even better. But so they'll consider that, and I wouldn't be surprised if something like that happened.
What about Markkanen?
Yeah.
Well, I'm like the last person that still really likes Markkanen. If he can just stay healthy, I think he's a really good player.
That's two of us. I like Markkanen.
Yeah. But you know, he's a guy that's been mentioned too, because I believe, what does he have, 1 year left on his contract? Something like that. So he's a guy, too, that a lot of teams would be interested in because he's really talented and he's really young.
What about that?
He's really tall.
The Porter guy that was instant offense.
Well, he's an expiring contract that there's value in that, too. You know, a veteran guy that makes a lot of money, that, you know, that expiring contract is an attractive commodity.
But he hasn't been himself for the last 2 months.
No, he's been hurt and basically hasn't played.
Yeah. He's supposed to be out 2 days, and it's been 2 months, pretty much. About 6 weeks, anyway.
Yeah, the Bulls are interesting. I mean, this is the first year they've been competitive in quite a while. They have a lot of good young players that, you know, and then obviously Zach LaVine has become a star, you know, probably a top 15 player in the league, which you can absolutely build around. And, you know, now they have seemingly intelligent management, and we'll see what they do.
I would agree, Frank. What do you make of what's going on here? These again, the stocks we don't talk about, the ones that were going way up when everybody was all over those stocks, not the ones that we necessarily look at. Or this way, I look at them because my clients are on them. And now those things are getting hammered. Every stock that was in the Reddit stuff and the those kinds of things, they're all, you know, everything's going down pretty heavy. I mean, they're going down by hunks of percentages, which...
Well, and then GameStop's gone down from 200 in the past 3 trading days.
Yeah.
It's at 120. Bitcoin was up over 6,000. That's at 60,000.
It's like 66 a trade, yeah.
And now it's down to 50, as you'd like to say. So it's down 25%.
Yeah, I mean, some of the, I mean, it's difficult right now. I actually put quite a bit of money to work this week, but I've really kept the puts like right there, Frank. If I'm buying the Russell at the 209, I'm buying like the 209 puts, which I like normally never do. And because I'm leaving room to the upside, but I just don't want, I don't want this stuff going down. And it doesn't look healthy to me. I mean, I think we're at the point where the Fed has to realize that right now pouring more money into the system is not much of a solution. When the inflation starts to move, you're risking throwing gas on the fire. And
that's what the small caps said a couple days ago when they were down 4%, 3.8%.
Yep. Well, I've got the one that you absolutely could not stop to the upside. And I'll get the, I won't say graph, I'll say chart. It's a chart, right, Frank? Not a graph. Kevin Reardon used to always say, don't call it a graph, it's a chart. Well, Russell is at 208.88, and it traded, where were we? We were at,
When you say the Russell, you mean the IWM.
IWM, and nobody trades the RUT. None of my people do. Well, it was 234 on, the 15th, which is what, last week? And now it's 208, so that's damn near 10% in what, four trading days? That's a lot.
Like 11 or 12.
But even though it ran up from, 160 in November, I always, like a broken record, everyone even knows what that is anymore. I'm always going to say that people lose more on the downside than they make on the upside because of the
we've been there.
Well, but not so much that, but I'm saying retail people for sure because.
Oh, yes.
Because you have the tax position where if you bought it at 208 and sold it at 235, you made, whatever, $100,000 that you can pay taxes on this year. But the guy who bought it there and lost $100,000 can only take off $3,000. So the big winner in this is the Federal Reserve, or not the Federal Reserve, but the Treasury.
Treasury and CPAs.
Yeah, and CPAs. And so it's – plus usually, at PTI we don't – people love us. We haven't switched clearing firms in forever, but when people were recruiting us, Frank, they loved it because we're like the only firm that has a debit balance. Because our clients actually have money here, where everybody else has got margin loans, right? I mean, I got to believe that the average person at Schwab or Fidelity, I don't know about average, but certainly the active traders are probably in a cash negative position, right?
Well, that's what happened to Robinhood.
Yeah.
And so what happens is they have to liquidate everybody because they have a margin call.
Right.
It's not the individual trader at times that has a margin call, but they'll liquidate everybody because the firm has a margin call.
Well, that's right. And
and people don't realize that.
Well, because there's a carry on how much, and there's a day or two financing you need because the stocks are T+3, right? Even today, they were T+5, and when I started, but now they're T+3 is when you actually settle. Now, options settle the next day. So there can be a spread between an option. If you do an option versus a stock position, there's a spread between when you pay the money and when you get the money, which usually is
not. Come on, Tom, when you started, the markets were closed on Wednesday so they could catch up with the bookkeeping.
I wasn't that old. Although after the crash, we were closed. Well, we didn't work till noon for a while, right?
Oh God, that was
bad. Those are bad days. Yeah, those are bad days. But anyway,
Tuesday was worse than the crash, though.
Tuesday, in what
way? Tuesday after the Black Monday.
Oh yeah, without a doubt.
Because it looked like the system finally broke. In the morning, nobody had answered their phones. It was just horrible.
And the rumors were that the person who bought all the futures to turn the market around was actually broke and didn't have the money to pay for him.
I remember that. I had forgotten about it.
Yeah, and I think it was more than just a rumor. But then again, it's like in basketball, which Maddie would understand. If you let one fly from pretty far out and the coach is ready to say, you idiot, and it goes in, he immediately turns it into a nice shot, right?
No, yes.
Yes, nice shot. So I'm kind of, you know, I've been making money every weekend shorting this TLT. Now, this week, not so. You know, I went to the well a few too many times. I got, I guess, a day and a half left, but I don't think anything happened in there. What do you make of this bounce back in the bonds this week and these commodities going the other way?
Boy, the bonds are just in foreign territory for me.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, my area of expertise is supposed to be the market, and I'm not so hot on that. I'm not bad, but, I mean, it's befuddling.
Well, the first of all, we didn't give the initial jobless claims were actually 97,000 better than expected this week. They're in the sixes for the first time in a while, like 687. And we also had GDP fourth quarter final was 4.3 instead of the 4.1 before. But Frank, you were probably just a little after me when you came to the floor, because when I came to the floor, there was no OEX, there were no spoofs, there were no futures. So, and it was the day when interest rates were, you know, whatever, 12-15%, depending on what talk about an inverted yield curve.
I was there when it was 12-15 when Roe counted.
Right, but what I'm saying was, when you were in the pit and you were watching, quote, the market, the bonds were running in lockstep with the market, right? So, and there was
they were one of the six or seven things you had up there.
Yeah, but if the bonds rallied, I mean the market rallied because the net interest rates were going down, which was a good thing, you know, in those days. So you watched. Imagine a world. I mean, just for listeners.
We watched the USD. Isn't that what we watched?
Well, if it was December.
Well, but, I mean, people, the S&P wasn't always SPU.
Right. Well, there was no S&P at the time. There was no future. The first future was that piece of crap out of the Kansas City, the value line. Remember that thing?
Yeah, the MIM.
I don't even know what it was, but it was a value line. I thought it was a V something something. Anyway, but you essentially watched bonds. You watched the bonds, and if bonds went flying down, it meant that interest rates were going up even more. Which was bad for stocks. So bonds if bonds came in lock limit down or up, and you knew where the market was going. You watched that, and maybe you watched like IBM and about five other stocks, and that was basically it. There was nothing else to watch. So could you imagine, I mean, today, looking at your screen and not having a future, not having a spider, not having NASDAQ future? I mean, you're just looking at all these stocks. Well, there weren't as many stocks, but are we going up or down, right?
We every pit had tape readers, people who actually looked at that streaming tape.
Well, you looked at the, I wonder how many people, if we get a clue of all our listeners right now, how many remember what the tick was? And how many remember what the tick E was? I don't remember actually sure what I knew what the tick E was. But the
tick E was just the industrials. The tick on the 30 Dow Jones industrials.
So right now, if you're looking at the market and you say, are we going up or down, you're going to look at the futures or you're going to look at the spider probably. Or if you're a tech guy, you're going to look at the NASDAQ or you're going to look at the QQQs. And
you look at the pre-opening bid ask.
Right. But if you didn't...
Yeah, because on stocks, we had no idea.
Well, that's where the tick
came. Where the stocks were trading before an opening. That
right,
was
and
rumor, too.
Well, the reason why we had no idea is they weren't trading. Maybe a little bit here and there. But the tick was, if you had, you know, 1,000 stocks, and then all of a sudden the market got bullish, and all of them were, like, 100 of them traded to the uptick side. If a stock's trading a quarter and the next, say, 151 and a quarter, and the next tick is 151 and 3/8, that's an uptick. It goes back down
that's
to
one. Plus one.
It's a plus one. If it goes back down to a quarter, it's a minus one. So the tick would give you an idea. If the tick jumped from, like, 100 to 500, you'd know instantly. Well, not instantly. You'd know after you saw the tick thing move. But all of a sudden, 500 stocks, people were buying them on the offers. So that was like... the future's moving, right? Although it was slower. And I don't know, yep. Is the tick even counted anymore? Probably. Somebody probably still has it someplace. But
I don't even know if I can get the tickie, but yeah, we used to look at that. That was big deal.
But right now, what do you think? We're talking to Dan about, he has a lot of stocks that he researches stuff and he tries to pick, you know, the rose out of the thorns, and I think by and large he does a pretty nice job. But he also is going to admit that if the market's going to correct, you know, he tries to buy stocks that if they go down further, you want to buy more of them. But he's not about to say that if I pick the top 30 stocks in the S&P and we correct 20%, that his 30 stocks are going to be up over that 3-week period. I mean, nobody would say that who's been in the business for a while, right, Frank?
His stocks don't really correlate with anything other than,
well, but even right now, if you really thought, for instance, that Caterpillar was absolutely worth this, 219.51, it's down 171. If you thought, boy, this stock's really worth, you know, look at the cash flow, look at this, look at that, this thing's, you know, whatever. It's five times, I'm just throwing out numbers that aren't correct. It's five times earnings, it's something, something. This thing should be trading 300. Well, then if it drops, you know, from 219.52 to 217, because the market's down, the Dow's down, you know, 5,000 points in the next 3 weeks, not saying it's going to be, then you sit there and go, well, that's pretty good. But you're also still down, right? I mean, you're probably not going to have the best stock in the Dow is not going to be up if the Dow corrects 15%. I mean, maybe it might if it's a medical company or somebody that's got a new drug. But by and large, they're all going to be down, right? And if you're down 5%, everybody else is down 15, you're relatively in good shape, but you're still down 5. Correct?
Correct.
So there are times when the level of the market is as important as picking the stock. I mean, clearly you want to be the one that's down the least, but you don't ever be down at all, right?
Right. It's, you know, you don't want to step in front of a train.
No.
Going up or down.
Yeah, you know, especially you don't want to catch the falling knife by the tip.
No, you can't catch a falling knife.
Because usually the tip is coming down first, right? I suppose you could have such a crummy knife that the tip wouldn't be coming down first.
But that was one of the first sayings I heard on the floor.
Don't catch a falling knife?
Yep.
Yep. Well, a lot of other sayings on the floor that are not for polite TV, but radio, but... anyway.
But our cores of trading discipline.
Yeah. All right, so the last few days, I mean, I always think that when you can tell where the market's going, of course, none of this really makes any sense anymore, but kind of where you, on a slow day, where you leak out on the close, you can sort of tell. I mean, we were going up all the time. When there was nothing but a big pause, Frank, the market just went up, right? Well, now it looks to me, especially on the NASDAQ side, with any excuse whatsoever, it's sliding the other way. And some of these stocks that, like I said earlier, the crowds and the coops and those things, they're down, you know, 15-25% quietly, quiet to me because I don't watch them that much. But the stocks that were everybody's outside of the index favorites 4 months ago are now the ones that are basically getting their ass kicked. Is that a fair assessment?
Yes. And then there's some that really aren't moving that much, like Apple. Yep. You know, when's it going to trade something other than 120?
Well, I mean, you've got Apple, and I'll throw that chart up here. Apple, as a matter of fact, it's the single biggest holder of one of the places that, I mean, Apple came from 65, basically, and 413.20. It bottomed out at like 60. And then it went to, you know, 140 in August. It made 145 in January, and now it's, you know, 119. So it's way below, I won't say a double top.
It is significant, but the past few weeks it's been stuck at 120.
It's been stuck. It led, it was one of the first stocks to go down, and now it's stuck, basically. Now, I wouldn't begin to tell you right now whether I think the next move for Apple would be to turn back to the upside if things got better, or if it's going to make another move down, because they seem to have a couple.
The move in Caterpillar's been impressive, but what's going to happen if the world economy weakens?
Yeah, I can't. It's hard for me to. And these companies that have now become such—I won't say monopolists, but they're clearly part of. There's not a whole lot of places that make bulldozers anymore, is there? They definitely become a pulse. Now these guys made it to. They traded 237. 79 and the 15th of, so the last Tuesday, right, was the 15th, and now today it is 219. So it's down, you know, pushing $18 from the top, which is 6%, 7.5%, something like that, in a week. Now that's significant, but still, it's This thing was 110, you know, when the COVID was messing around with us. So it's, you know, it has...
And it was down under 100 not that long ago.
Right. So, I mean, is there room here? You know, I don't know. I mean, it all comes down to, you know, what is your discount rate? Are they making money? Are they going to pay a dividend? Are they going to increase the dividend? I'm going to say that it's a little ahead of itself here. I mean, see if I can get the PE.
Well, earnings are the end of April.
Okay. All right.
I'm gonna Caterpillar.
Where we are. Trading tools. What do we want? Analytical tools. We want company fundamentals, correct? All right.
Mm-hmm.
This is on my IB thingy here. And their PE is probably going to be, I'm looking right at it, PE is 41. Okay, for a company that makes bulldozers, that is real high, traditionally, right?
Well, you remember back in the day, for a company that made bulldozers, it'd be about, what, 12?
Yeah, and get a load of this. Revenue per share, $76. So they're trading three times revenue. That's a real lot for an old-line manufacturing company. I'm just saying. Just saying. You know, and their dividends, $4. So what is that? Out of 225 is 1.8%, something like that?
Mm-hmm.
1.9%? I'm looking right here. My math was not as good. You know, that's okay, but it's not spectacular, especially if...
Well, there's not a whole lot of fundamental traders left.
No. Well, but
otherwise,
it's all,
you wouldn't buy anything.
Well, yeah, you wouldn't buy anything. That's a, but, you know, and it, the question comes that you got to ask yourself: if everything is overpriced in your mind, all right, that Caterpillar should be, you know, I'm going to say their traditional has got to be what, 17 times earnings, not 40. Let's be nice and say 20. If you buy it here, you have to assume that with the breakout of, you know, everybody being healthy again in the world, and all of a sudden, somehow or another, we start growing in real growth, not just in nominal growth, you have to be able to say to yourself, self, these guys are going to grow into this price. Or you might say, since there's only a few places left that make bulldozers, these guys are going to be able to, the pricing the way it is, when the rest of the world is going to go up 10% in prices, they're going to be able to go up 50% because nobody else is making them. That's another, I mean, a lot of this is people are betting. I mean, Amazon, as much as you can't quantify people's speech, Frank, I mean, if you talk to most people about Amazon, they'll tell you they're trying to put everybody else out of business. The minute they do, they're going to triple their prices, right?
Yep.
That's the expectation. Now, of course, that is illegal, but nobody cares about that anymore. But I mean, that is, now does everybody really think that, I mean, Lowe's and those places, Home Depot, Menards, those guys are doing fine because I think they have pricing power. I think they have enough of a monopoly influence.
Yet Best Buy is shutting down, what, 300 stores or something?
Yeah. Well, I don't think they have anywhere near the pricing power. I mean, you can't buy 2x4s, like maybe you can on Amazon, but the fact is lumber's up, you know, but it's doubled in, what, 9 months or something? Isn't that what somebody's saying? And,
mm-hmm.
You know, so, I mean, they can, if you have pricing power, inflation is good for you. If not, it's not. Well, Frank, talk to you on Monday, buddy. Have a nice week. If I don't
okay,
see you
later.
This weekend, SP Futures down 17, NASDAQ Futures down 74. Back tomorrow, Stocks and Jacks.
What did we learn, Palmer?
I don't know, sir.
I don't know either. I guess we learned not to do it again.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to PTISecurities.com. PTI Pro Direct. Trade for as low as a penny per share and a dollar per option contract. Learn more at PTIProDirect.com. Nadex. Offering an intuitive way to trade the financial markets. Visit Nadex.com. Home Source Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. Hamzy Analytics. Listen to Fari Hamzy every other Thursday and visit HamzyAnalytics.com. ChiroMed. Back or neck pain? Schedule a complimentary consultation by calling 708-403-2727. Dax Research. Tune in for David Andelman's technical analysis on Mondays and Thursdays and call 1-800-821-4968.